Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Under the Radar SFF Books Podcast. I'm your host, Blaze, as always. Thank you so much for listening and joining wherever you may be around the world. And I have another author interview for you. I am pleased to be joined by fantasy author AJ Calvin, the author of The Kayan Legacy, as well as the completed trilogy, The Relics of War. It's a pleasure to have you on, AJ, and welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you on. And ever since I finished Exile about a month ago, I've been wanting to just talk about it because it's so riveting. It's such a character-focused book, which slowly unravels the world around it as you continue down the story. But we have plenty of time to get into that. Now, normally when I have authors on, I always ask them the first question is, like, what made you want to be an author? But I thought I'd ask you a little bit of a different question because looking back through Exile, I looked at the author's note and I read it again, and it was so touching and striking. I know you were writing this at a difficult time in your life. Would you care to share a little bit of that with the listeners? I thought it'd be really good for them to hear this.
Yeah. So I had, before I started writing Exile, I had had a lot of stress in my life. A lot of it was work related. Some of it was some family stuff. And there was almost a 10-year span where, like, I would write stuff, but I wouldn't get very far and I couldn't finish it. And it was so frustrating because I love writing. That's like my outlet, my thing. It always has been. And I came up with the idea of Exile probably at least a year before I actually started writing it. And I was afraid that if I started it, I wasn't going to finish it because I'd had this like long period of not being able to finish anything. But once I started, it just came. Like, and I finished the first draft in, I want to say it was like 7 weeks, which was crazy. I had never finished anything that quickly before. And I finished it and I was really excited. I was like, this book is the one, you know, that I think it's going to be a really good thing. People are going to like this. So I ended up going through the querying process for traditional publishers. And, as other authors probably have mentioned or you know, they'll know if they've been through that, how difficult that process can be. You know, you submit and sometimes you don't hear anything. Sometimes you get generic responses. I had a few where I like your writing, but I don't think we can market this right now. And that's frustrating too, you know, because it's like, I put so much of myself into this book that like, I really wanted to get somewhere. I guess while I was doing that, I kept writing the rest of the series. I finished the fourth book in 2020. So, you know, this has been a few years coming. And then I had written, so you mentioned The Relics of War previously. I had written that, oh, geez, I was a teenager a long time ago. And I pulled that out and I decided, okay, you know what? I'm going to rewrite this. I'm going to make this good. I'm going to try the indie publishing with the trilogy because I wasn't sure if that one would have as much interest. And then after I released the first book, The Moon's Eye, last year, there was such a response. I was really surprised and happy that, you know, I was getting this feedback and people were enjoying it. And I was like, you know, maybe I'm onto something here. Maybe I can do this. So then I decided, okay, I'm going to go ahead and indie publish The Kayan Legacy also because I really wanted this story out there. So yeah, that's kind of the story about how all of that came together.
Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing. And yeah, I agree. Like, this story needs to be out. It's such a character-focused story of first-person POV through Andrew, who we will talk plenty about him. And it's a story of highs and lows, emotions, tragedies, and everything encompassing it. So I'm very excited to talk about this. And your Relics of War trilogy, I have it on my TBR. I haven't read it yet. Very much looking forward to that. And just one more thing before we actually talk about the actual book itself, the dedication. I thought this really hits home because it reminds me of myself. Is this book is for anyone who, even as an adult, still hasn't found their way. Your time will come. I didn't find my way until I was like a late teenager, early 20s. And it's reminiscent of Andrew and the people around him. So that really, really speaks true to me. So I thought this will speak true for many people as well.
Yeah, I wrote it that way because I feel like I kind of found myself as a writer while I was writing this series. So it was kind of a personal thing for me too.
Wonderful. Well, with that, why don't we talk a little bit about this? And I feel like we're not going to talk about major spoilers for like the rest of the series. I want to talk about primarily the first chapter in detail, because that first chapter, it hits you like a gut punch in all different styles and levels. It's just wild, and people will be grabbed from this first chapter. So the king, who is Andrew, is the son of the king. He's actually the captain of the forces. And previously, his mother had just recently passed away. Obviously, the mother, the queen, married to the king. And you find out right away that Andrew is not the biological son of the king. The mother was pregnant before marrying the king. The king knew about it, and you go on from there. But now, with the passing of the mother, they're talking about the legacy and talking about heirs, so to speak. And the king has no choice but to declare that Andrew is not his biological son. Mm-hmm. And has to go to one of his brothers, Colin, who Colin is... Ooh, we could talk a whole time about Colin, but we'll save that for a little bit.
Yeah.
Talk to me about just that intro part of just slowly unveiling the plot to the audience, because it hits you like in just waves, even with like the first chapter, I think it's like 15 pages or so. So talk about that initial scene.
So yeah, it starts out with a conversation between Andrew and the king, and the king is telling him he has to let everyone know that Andrew can't succeed him because of, you know, biology and stuff. Andrew's technically illegitimate. So they've known this was coming for a long time, and they never officially said anything, but people just assumed, you know, Andrew was going to be the next in line. And that's part of Andrew's mother's means of protecting him in a way, to help perpetuate this story that, you know, he's part of the family. And the king at the beginning is, he acted as the father figure for Andrew, because Andrew doesn't know his father, never met him. He was out of the picture before Andrew was ever born, for other reasons that are probably spoilery, so we won't go into that. Andrew does know that his father was a dragon mage, and one of his abilities was that he could assume a human form, which is how Andrew came about. And in the first chapter, it is mentioned that Andrew is a skin changer. He's half dragon, so he can take on a human form or he can take on a dragon form. But with the laws of the kingdom, it's not safe for him to reveal what he is.
Yeah, he's hiding all of that, and even from the king. Mm-hmm. The king doesn't know that he's a skin changer. Right. That's something no one has ever known except his mother, who has now passed away. So it's his secret to bear. And then once the king reveals that he can't name Andrew the heir and names Colin, that starts just a whole family drama and political struggle for power. But Andrew is so important to the kingdom and the army because he's such a great captain and commander that he continues to go on like campaigns for the kingdom. And actually, you do a great scene where he goes north and that and does that great battle scenes. It's one of the reasons I love this book so much. Is it has a little bit of everything that you could want in an epic fantasy. It has has great plotting. It's very, very quick read. You can get it done in a weekend. Has great battle sequences, has family drama, politics, has tragedy. It has like a little bit of a romance thread, and it has like hidden magic. It's just everything compacted into one book, and it was just like such a joy to read. So I was very riveted with it. And on the flip side, the second half of the first chapter is Andrew's interaction with his wife, Claire. And this is very, very, it was very sad on both fronts. So I'll set the scene. So obviously, because Andrew can't be named heir, he has to tell his wife, who he's been married to, but I believe it's 3 or 4 years by this
4
point,
years.
4 years. She is, of course, devastated because it was a marriage for politics. It wasn't a marriage for love. But you would think after 4 years there would be some type of affection. And it turns out no. Claire is just devastated. And at that time, she says, I would never have married you if I would have known this." It's like broken heart, and she pushes to have the wedding annulled, which is crushing. And on the one hand, I get it. I understand. Like her whole perception of what this is has just been ripped from underneath her. But on the other side, Andrew, he is just like he didn't pick the marriage, number one, so it's not his fault. Two, he like it's not his fault that he's a dragon and that he was is illegitimate. And you just feel for both of them. So tell me about that scene. It's just thinking about it again, it just really saddens me that you put Andrew through that.
That one was rough. Claire is very ambitious throughout the first part of the book, and she has this drive, and she's been training her whole life and working towards this her whole life. She assumed she was going to be queen, and then when it doesn't work out, like you said, she's just devastated. But she's not one of those who breaks down and cries when she's upset. She gets angry. So there's a bit of an argument that happens after he tells her. And he was also under orders from the king not to tell her. So there's that too. So he's trying to do the right thing by her, but he's also trying to do what he's asked for by the king, who he has a lot of respect for. So it's very torn in that part about how everything happened. Now, I know, like, you don't see much of Claire in the second half of Exile. You will see her again in book three. I'll say that much.
Oh, great. Always, yeah, that's a little bit of spoilers as to what happens, but I'm very much looking forward to seeing her and what goes on in that one. And she's a very, very interesting character in emotionally and just like a gut punch for what her thought process is. That was really she's a really great character to read. And another aspect, which is not really in the first chapter, but it's expanded upon as you go along, is Andrew has he actually has three brothers. We talked about Colin a little bit. We're going to talk more detail about him. Another one is Thomas, and the third one is Alexander. And Alexander, he holds a very big secret. He is actually a Magi, and the way you can tell about the Magi is that they have a. I'm not sure if it's a. I forget if it's a birthmark or is or just something that forms over their course.
It's
And
a birthmark.
okay, it's a birthmark, and they are they're hunted. And if you find out that you're a Magi, you're put to death. So that's a secret that he that Alexander's hidden that Andrew knows. I believe it was through his mother told him, and that he has to protect him. So he's not only dealing with his own stuff, with his marriage, with his brother, with the king, and with protecting Alexander from this horrible fate, which, if God forbid, if ever it was found out, like chaos would ensue. And that's pretty much the one of the plots. Tell me a little bit about the Magi and a little bit how, like, maybe not too spoily, but like the how the magic works and what and maybe why they're feared so much.
So the mages in this series, some of them are fairly powerful. Some of them have more mundane talents. Like there's one that his ability lets him send messages long distance. That's all he can do. That's all his magic is. For human mages, they have like a single ability that they are born with. And they don't, it doesn't manifest itself necessarily, but they can choose to go through training, if you will, to become a mage and learn how to use their powers, or some of them choose not to. And but the mark is still there. It's always physically there on them. As far as why they're feared in Novania, that actually doesn't come up till later in the series, where there's some speculation as to how it started. But there's a lot of fear because it's been centuries where they've had these laws in place that mages, if someone's found with the mark, they should be executed. And I guess it's alluded to a little bit in Exile that they're dangerous, and something to be feared. So, yeah.
Yeah, we don't want to get down too much down
Yeah.
the spoiler road, but that's just for the reader to discover. Now, the final brother we need to talk about Colin, obviously, because right off the bat, when you read about him, you know he's very spiteful towards Andrew. Andrew's the older brother. He was promised everything, and then when Colin finds out that Andrew will not inherit the throne, it's going to go to him. He doesn't take it with grace. He has to be spiteful. He has to do every single thing possible to like stomp on Andrew's head in more ways than one. And that's going to get into spoiler territory. So there's always like the constant clash, like family drama with Colin. Talk to us a little bit about Colin. What was your mindset in wanting to make him kind of like the, for Andrew, at least the initial like clashing partner?
So the original idea for this story, I wanted Andrew and Alex because they're very close. They have a very close sibling bond and they look out for each other. But then I was like, if he's got three brothers, there's that sibling rivalry thing that has to happen somewhere. And I kind of took it and went a little to the extreme side with it just to, I don't know. Make things interesting, I guess. Colin is a character I've had a number of reviewers comment on that he's one of those that they love to hate, with good reason. You'd have to read to know exactly why, but he's I had so my brother, Guardian is actually dedicated to my brother because he was somewhat of an inspiration for Alexander's character. He asked me a few years ago because I let him read early versions of the story, and he's like, "What was your inspiration for Colin?" And I was like, "Honestly, besides the sibling rivalry thing, I don't know. He just kind of happened, and he's a really bad dude." So, yeah.
I mean, obviously, sibling rivalry is always there, regardless of what you read. Even in just history, it's always something ready to be poked at. And that's fantastic about Guardian being dedicated to your brother. And that is set to be released in 2 months' time, at the end of in November. Is that correct?
End of November. I believe it's the 26th. It's the last Tuesday in November.
Lovely. Right after Thanksgiving. So it should be
Yep.
as you're sitting on the couch recovering from your turkey coma, that's something to get. And you're gonna get through this exile in short order. In fact, I believe I got the cover in front of me. The book is just over 260 pages. So you can get through it.
Yeah, it's not terribly long.
You can get through it in a weekend. One thing I wanted to ask, because you wrote this as a quartet, so four books. I'm assuming all of them are relatively the same size. Did you always know it was going to be four books? And a second part to that question, was there ever any thought to maybe combining like two of the books to make them just a bit more beefier, maybe making like a duology or a trilogy from that?
The original idea was after I wrote Exile, like I mentioned, I was trying to query. So I was trying to hit that ideal word count for traditional publishing, which for fantasy runs between 80,000 and 120,000 words, and Exile falls at 95. So that's kind of why the sizing happened. Originally, I knew there was going to be three books. And as I was writing Harbinger, which is the third book, I realized there was so much more I had to add and stuff to finish the story. I was like, I think this is going to be four. Now, with Harbinger, you mentioned Exile kind of ends on a cliffhanger. The third book is probably the biggest cliffhanger in the series, so I'm just going to warn you there. But again, because I was trying to get an agent for these. I was trying to keep them within a set word count for that purpose. Exile is the shortest one of the four, but not by that much.
Exile, it's a little bit of a cliffhanger. It's not like some gut punches I've had like previously. And the good news is that with the book coming out in 2 months' time, you won't have to wait too long. So that's wonderful. And the final part I want to talk about before we move on here is that Exile, as I said, it's very character driven. The writing is very reader friendly. You can dive right into it and just be absorbed. I've said in my reviews, and I've spoken to people about this, like this reminds me so much of John Gwynne's writing. Now, I don't know if you ever read John Gwynne, but it's just like
I
that
haven't
focus.
yet. It's on my list.
Okay. Well, he's one of my favorite authors. So I absolutely loved his writing, and yours reminded me so much about it, especially the main character in Malice. His name is Corbin. Andrew reminded me so much of him. And if you like that type of writing style, then this series is for you. I promise you'll enjoy it as much as I have. So that's just wonderful. So with that, why don't we take a forward step? Can you talk to us a little bit about your Relics of War trilogies? I have not read this, so I'm coming in completely blind. How's the reception been with this trilogy, and a little bit of what it's about?
All right, so the trilogy is a little bit different than with the Kane Legacy because there's six main characters and you get to see chapters from each of them throughout the books. The first book is called The Moon's Eye, and the title comes from it's a magical relic that one of the main characters is sent to obtain. The gods in that world are very interactive. They're very present, and he's sent on this mission by one of the gods, who sort of threatens him in a way to do it. It's more of I've been told it's more of like the classic fantasy feel where there's a it's a big conflict with good and evil, and there's magic and several non-human species. I don't do dwarves and elves and stuff like that in my books, but there are scorpion men. There are the Drakone, which are sort of lizard-ish people. The Murkor are some of my favorites. They're cave-dwelling nocturnal people. Their alchemists are very well known in that world for creating things that don't require magic but have some pretty fantastic results. There's a lot going on in that trilogy. It was a fun project, and like I said, I wrote that when I was a teenager, so it was in the late 90s, a while ago. And then I dug it out and rewrote it a couple years ago, deciding that I was gonna try the indie publishing route with that, see how it was received. And the first book has done a lot better than I was anticipating. I really didn't know what to expect with it when I released it. And I've had so I was lucky enough to get a BookBub deal on the first book back in April. And after that, I'm still getting like read through of the series. People are buying the second and the third book afterwards, which is really, really cool. That's kind of what you go for as an author. You want people to like your work enough to keep going. So, yeah.
Lovely. Yeah, I think I remember seeing it on BookBub that one time. And I think it was in your newsletter. I was able to get the completed full omnibus of the trilogy. Yeah. So, and the
yeah,
cover
it was something I did. I turned 40 in April. So for the newsletter, I kind of did a gift to my readers on my birthday. And it was the complete trilogy. So I gave them like 2 weeks to download it. And then I actually put it on sale as a bundle.
Lovely. And the cover art for the Relics of War trilogy is really, really grabbing. And the cover art for Exile as well. Could you go through a little bit of the cover art process for you and how that came about? Because I know there's a lot of stuff going on Twitter, the book community, with regards to like AI and stuff like
right.
that. So just trying to get up.
Yeah. So when I was getting ready to publish The Relics of War, I was looking at various cover artists and I came in contact with Jamie Noble. He's out of the UK and he does a lot of illustration for board games, card games, other books. And I really liked his style of artwork. So we started working on that. And the trilogy was his first project for me. He is amazing to work with. And since I live in Colorado, there's a bit of a time difference. But we'll schedule like a Skype meeting as we're getting ready to do a project. And it's usually like 7 a.m. my time. So it's early. But I'll kind of go through what I have in my head for the cover, and he starts sketching. Like he'll share his screen and he starts sketching in I think he uses Photoshop, like right there, and gets a rough idea. And then it's usually, I don't know, a week or so later, he'll send me a draft. What do you think of this? And it's so cool to like see my vision translated into the artwork. He did the covers for the trilogy and the Kaon Legacy. And then I also have a cover reveal coming up in October for Serpentis, which is a standalone related to the Relics of War trilogy. He also did the artwork for that. And I'm really excited to share Serpentis because it's going to be, it's a really, really cool cover. So.
Awesome. Can't wait to see that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I remember reading on either your blog or your Twitter that you've been working on a science fiction project as well. I don't know how much of anything you were able to share with us, but would you be able to tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So I actually finished writing that one, the draft of it, 2 weeks ago. But I've been working on that for a good chunk of this year, and it's a culmination of a lot of ideas I've had over the years, and I finally figured out a way to put them together and make a cohesive story. And it was a lot of fun to write that one. I've wanted to do sci-fi for a long time, and this is more of a space opera type sci-fi. I mean, there is some science stuff there. They mentioned genetics and the main character is a cyborg. So there's some fun stuff there. I, on Thursday, released on my blog the title for it. It's called Wraith and the Revolution. Probably won't be publishing it until at least 2025. That's kind of the tentative window right now. Since next year, I have Serpentis, Harbinger, and Legend, and three in a year is probably my limit since I work full-time also. My husband likes to see me every once in a while, so I can't spend all of my free time writing, even though sometimes I'd like to. But the sci-fi story was a lot of fun to write, and I have some cover art, or not cover art, character artwork in the works for that. I'm working with her. I believe her Twitter handle is just Miss Art. But she's doing some character artwork for me, and that will be included in the book. I'm also planning to do some bookmarks with them because there's some really fun characters in that series, in that story.
Lovely. And speaking of bookmarks, I'm holding up the one for the Kaelin Legacy. This one is lovely. The bookmarks and the artwork is just wonderful. I'll definitely be looking to look at Jamie's artwork in the future. You mentioned obviously this is not your being a published author is not your full-time work. So how do you find the time to do you have like a set schedule that you do every week, every month of this is my writing time, or is it when you just have like an inspiration, you got to write it down and see where it goes.
So with the random inspirations, yes, I will write it down so I don't forget. I'm not one of the authors who can work on more than one project at a time, because if I try to do that, nothing ever gets finished. So I actively write one thing at a time. Usually before I go to work in the morning, my husband leaves about an hour before I do. So I get a little bit of a window where I'm by myself and it's quiet. And I usually will write then. Sometimes in the evenings, I'll work on stuff a little bit. I try not to do that too much anymore, just so that I have some time with my husband. Weekends, though, like today, he had to go into work. So, I have free time. I end up writing quite a bit on Saturdays, if he's at work, or sometimes even if he's not. We have a saltwater fish tank that he likes to tinker with, and he'll spend a couple hours working on stuff there, and then I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna go write stuff. So it's not really a set schedule, but it is when I can fit things in.
Great. We all have to whenever we have the time to get around. I'm the same way in regards to like reading and even recording podcasts. I try to do it not when my wife's do busy or schedule something on the calendar. So I know all too well the married life. So final question I wanted to ask you, and this is not about any of your books. What are you currently reading now? And are there any books or series that you've read over the years that you felt deserve like a bigger audience or that authors need to be more well known than where they are?
So the book I'm currently reading is Shadow of Hyperion by JCM Byrne. It's the fourth book in his Hybrid Helix series. I read the first book last year as part of an escapist book tour. I do some reviews for them every once in a while, and I loved that first book so much I read the rest of the series. And I've been waiting for almost a year. His fourth book just came out a couple weeks ago, so I'm currently reading that. There is space opera. The main character is pretty funny. It's a fun series. As far as what was the other half of your question? I'm sorry.
Like under the radar, quote unquote, book series or authors who feel like deserve a bigger, more eyes on them than what they currently have.
So the last, I want to say the last like 3 years, I've read a lot more indie authors than I had in the past. And there are some really, really great reads out there. One of the ones I read earlier this year that I really enjoyed, and she's still actively working on the series, is the first book's called Sordanian. I believe I'm saying that correctly, by L.L. Stevens. I've read the first three books in that series, and they're really good. Halo Scott is another author I've really enjoyed. Her books aren't going to appeal to everybody. There are some very graphic scenes. Like her writing style is almost like poetry. It's so amazing. I love her writing. Trying to think. I guess The Hybrid Helix by JCM Byrne, that series, he definitely should get more recognition for that. They're great books. Yeah, trying to think if there's other ones. Those are the ones that come to mind anyway right now.
Awesome. I actually have Serdanium by L.L. Stevens. I have the first two books in that series. I need to get to them. They're on my TBR, so we'll share. I'll let you know as soon as I get to those. Those will be great. Well, this has been a ton of fun, and thank you so much again for joining. Do you mind telling our listeners where they can find you, your social media handles, your blog, and where they can pick up your books?
All right, so social media, I am on Twitter and Blue Sky as AJ Calvin, and then Facebook and Instagram as author AJ Calvin. My books are available, so ebooks are available wide, which means you can get them Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Kobo, Apple, Google Play, any of those vendors. Hardcovers are available anywhere that Ingram Spark distributes, so you can get them from Amazon if that's your preferred place, or Books a Million can get them, Barnes and Noble. Paperbacks are a little more limited because I did not do the Ingram distribution for the paperbacks, but you can get them on Barnes and Noble and Amazon. I have a website, ajcalvin.net. I have a blog every Thursday. Sometimes it's writing related stuff. Sometimes it's I was doing a series for a while called Tales from the Lab. I'm a microbiologist, so if something odd or weird came up at work, sometimes I would write a little bit about that. No names or anything, but and then I do have a newsletter that goes out once a week. The sign up is available on my website if you're interested for that. The newsletter is probably the best way to keep up with what I'm doing. And every once in a while, I feel like there's so many things going on. It almost feels like chaos in my brain. Because I'm always writing something and I'm almost always releasing something or have something coming up. I started doing some events this year. I was at Fort Collins Comic Con a few weeks ago, which was a lot of fun. So, yeah. All of that sort of stuff will be in my newsletter if you choose to sign up for that. Am I missing anything?
I don't think so. I think you covered pretty much
All right.
all of it there. So AJ, again, thank you so much for coming on. This has been such a treat, and we all look forward to Guardian being released in 2 months now. It's gonna be fantastic.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
Anytime. So, cheers, everybody.